soon we may be able to use very personalized vaccines using our own immune cells to treat conditions like skin cancer. Results out this morning from two early stage human trials show very promising results. Joining us to discuss this and other science news is Casey Harrigan. She's a producer from Australia's Science Channel. How's it going, Casey?
Well, thanks. How are you going?
Really well, thank you. And the majority of patients in both these trials, I understand, remained tumor-free for 2 years. Amazing.
Yeah,
how does this
absolutely
work?
Incredible. So this is immunotherapy, which is really promising for lots of types of cancer. This particular trial, like you said, looked at skin cancer. This trial was all they can say sort of scientifically 100% was that this is safe, which is a really important first step. It doesn't feel quite as like sexy as, oh, we've cured cancer. But I'm actually incredibly excited about this study because now we can actually move on to the next part, which is proving that they work. And in this safety trial, the immunotherapy did work. So that's
wow.
Really exciting.
So that was just kind of a bonus.
Yeah, kind of a bonus. And sort of, you know, they know it moving forward that they can, you know, test things out and it's going to work. So that's really exciting. So yeah, so immunotherapy is about taking your own immune system and using it to attack the cancer. So lots of cancer treatments, they kill the cancer cells, but they also kill your healthy cells as well. And you need those, like you need your own human cells.
And that's often why people are so sick when they undergo chemo treatment.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So with immunotherapy, it's quite resource intensive. So this, you know, it's not like some magic, you know, really simple cure. But it'll keep people a lot healthier, work a lot better, be a lot more targeted. So, immunotherapy is a huge area moving forward for cancer.
Do you know if we've ever used this sort of tailored approach to vaccines before?
Not so much for vaccines. It's really quite new. There's no sort of common disease vaccine out there that uses that approach, but they're hoping that they can. Yeah, it's just we're going to see it blow up more and more in the next few years. Yeah, gene therapy and immunotherapy are really going to revolutionize the way that we treat illness and prevent illness as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine, although any kind of treatment for cancer is expensive, will this be quite a process for each individual patient?
It's hard to say moving forward, and you never know, you know, if they put a lot of study and a lot of effort into researching it, they'll find ways to make it, you know, to make the economies of scale work. At the moment, this would be, super expensive, super resource heavy, just because you've got to go in and you've got to tailor each vaccine for each person according to their specific tumors, and they've got to change all of these things within the medicine. But who knows? Like, I think moving forward, they are very likely to find a way to make it, you know, make it fast. I mean, you can spit in a jar now, send it away, and get your whole, you know, ancestry history. That's incredible, and that's so personalized.
That is
so
pretty cool. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. So I think there's huge room for optimism, even though at this stage all we know is that they're safe for sure, and all we know is that it's quite difficult. It'll change moving forward.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And these things take time. So we're in the middle of two early stage human trials, and then they're going to test its efficacy.
Yeah, so that's the next step. So it's sort of the bane of science is that everything's 5 or 10 years away. And I have to, you know, I have to play into that cliche again today. It's, you know, 5 to 10 years away. But that's, you know, it's a more solid 5 to 10 years than a lot of other studies are.
So. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Casey Harrigan from Australia's Science Channel is with us talking about the latest research. And apparently our skin microbiome has more than just bacteria crawling all over it.
Yeah. So this study is really interesting. It's got a little bit of everything. So not only have we found out that our skin microbiome is more than just bacteria, it's a whole other branch of the tree of life, archaea as well. And archaea are these single-celled organisms. You often find them living in really extreme environments. So they live in Antarctica, they live in volcanic vents, and they live on our skin. But they pretty much only live on our skin before we turn 12 and then after we turn 60. So, you know, with a bit of a margin of error in there as well. And I'll get back to why that is in a minute. But the way they found that out is through a NASA study into space exploration contaminants. So this is just one of those stories. It's got a bit of everything. We're learning something new. There's something interesting about that new knowledge. And the way we found it out was really quite fascinating as well. So, yeah, NASA was looking at a bunch of clean rooms and they found all this archaea and they couldn't figure out where it was coming from because everything should have been, you know, all of the materials they were bringing in should have been clean. And they went, oh, it must be coming from the humans, you know, and then they sort of followed it up from there. I find that really just the storytelling of that is really interesting. But the reason that we have it when we're young and when we are older again is because archaea actually likes dry skin. And apparently it's pretty helpful with the cleanup process. So it's actually doing something for you as well. I mean, our bacteria does as well. It's not, don't feel grossed out by the fact that you've got a skin microbiome and you've got bacteria, because it's actually crucial to like our whole, you know, the ecosystem of our body. So when we sort of become teenagers and we get a bit oily and we, you know, get some of that oil production going, our archaea populations sort of go away. Then as we age and our skin dries out again, they come back.
So could this maybe be applied to beauty therapies and eczema treatments?
Look, that's a really good question. Perhaps it could. I'm not 100% sure how that would necessarily work, but hey, like, it's a whole new thing to look at.
Yeah.
So yeah, certainly bacterial sprays and stuff like that are becoming more and more popular sort of in the alternative industry, so I wouldn't sort of recommend them, but it's interesting that people are using them and, you know, are finding results from that. So, and that's an area that is, you know, science is catching up with, and we're learning more and more about both our gut microbiome and our skin microbiome. So this is, yeah, a huge, huge amount of knowledge to know that we've got a whole other type of organism living on our bodies.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just love how, you know, we're learning now about bacteria, how it can affect our mood and behavior as well.
Yeah, our second brain in our gut. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible.
We'll have to keep an eye on that one. Casey Harrigan is with us talking about the latest science. And tell us about this delightful research into honeybees and their perception of colour.
Yeah, so the thing that's amazing to me is that honeybees have 5 eyes, which I did not know before. It's common knowledge, apparently, but I didn't know. So they've got these 3 eyes oculi on top of their heads, and they point straight up to the sky, and then the 2 compound eyes on the side of their head, that's what looks at the flowers and all that sort of stuff. So these oculi, they can sense ambient light. So what's useful about this is that that means that they can take the light as it changes, as they fly around, as clouds come over, but they'll still know that flowers and leaves and whatever else that's in their environment is still the same color. So to a honeybee, and to us as well, but in a slightly different way, you can always look at a sunflower and know that sunflower's yellow. Now, to a camera or to a vision sensing system, to a robot, as soon as the light changes, the camera goes, well, I don't know what color that sunflower is anymore. Like, it just gets really confused. And I'm sure, you know, we've probably all noticed it when we try and take a selfie and our camera just freaks out because it doesn't have enough light.
Or a blue dress looks white or the other way around.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. So when you're outside, the sunlight tends to make things look a bit blue. When you're sort of inside, if you're, you know, in a cafe that's got lots of Edison bulbs, it'll tend to look really orange to a camera. Our eyes can just really easily figure out, like, we just know. And for honeybees as well, they just know. So these researchers from RMIT basically did the maths, and they figured out how the honeybees can take that ambient light and take the way that the light changes and apply it to those colors, and they're hoping that now they can sort of implement that into cameras and vision sensing systems.
Wow.
And all that sort of stuff. So hopefully we can use this have better cameras and you know, better robotics and drones and stuff like that. So it won't just be for our selfies. It'll be for anything that needs, you know, vision sensing systems in it.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And we can hear more about that on Australia Science Channel.
Yep, that's right. So australiascience.tv is where you can find out all about these.
Hey, Casey Harrigan, great to have you in the studio. Thanks so much.
For having me.